Welcome to Share the Bytes, episode 17. The Dragon has launched. Hey, Grant.
Ian, good to see you again.
Good to see you. Well, today we're talking about something that just captured our attention like no other. I don't know about you, but I was stuck to my laptop for a good, I don't know, probably 3 hours, if not more, watching something pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was a unique perspective, that's for sure. And the first time in a decade almost that the U.S. is bringing back its space capabilities.
Yes. So for those of you who are listening, we are talking about the launch of the SpaceX Dragon Crew module, taking two U.S. astronauts from U.S. soil to the International Space Station. And that's a pretty big deal right now. As you said, how many years?
Yeah, over 9, almost 10.
Yeah. So again, back in 9 years ago, so this was July 8th, 2011, Atlantis was the last space shuttle to launch to take astronauts to the International Space Station. Since then, American astronauts have just been catching a ride on a Soyuz capsule with our Russian partners.
Yeah, all the supply missions and all the crew missions have been flying from other space agencies, mostly Russia, for the International Space Station, which has been up there almost 20 years now.
Yeah. And this is a pretty big deal because it wasn't NASA's spacecraft that went up, was it?
Not at all. This is the new space, as they call it. This is the privatization, the contracting out of the actual operations from NASA in the United States for their transportations.
Yeah. And we're going to get into what happened and the reasons why. But let's talk a little bit about history. So International Space Station, as you said, been up there 20 years. I was fortunate enough to actually see a module of it before it launched into space. I don't know which module, but I visited Cape Canaveral with a group of students while I was in college. And we visited Cape Canaveral. We actually saw the shuttle Atlantis, which was great while it was being serviced. I got to sit in its little entry port where you crawl through. Maybe I could find the photo. We'll see. And then it was used for service supplies, ferrying passengers. And then NASA just stopped. It was too expensive. And the space shuttle fleet was also pretty old.
Yeah.
And I said STS-135 was the last mission. And I think I don't know if you can correct me. I think the space shuttles had been flying for something like 30 or 31 years.
It's been a long time. Yeah, the Wikipedia articles will have all the details that we forget about.
Yeah. And so with an old spaceship, you need something new, but that's going to take time.
Right.
And money.
Yeah.
And we kind of know NASA's not always flush with money. And the space program's not something that this country is always behind. It's no longer the Cold War, so we have different priorities.
That's right.
But we still have an incredible space station with astronauts from all different countries, with science experiments that are giving us all sorts of insights into new science and technologies here on Earth.
Yeah.
And people have to go up there, cargo has to go up there, and without the space shuttle, we have mostly relying on the Soyuz capsule from the Russian space agency.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But that's kind of expensive too, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think it's something like $80 million a seat for a flight.
Yeah. So with all that in mind, NASA, with the history, was thinking, it's like, instead of just having one type of module that NASA runs that has to build that is at the whim of congressional budgets, and then having to rely on a fluctuating market or costs with partners using their rockets, We have to really encourage other companies and other industries to create the next best thing.
I heard it described by one NASA official as focusing on longer range missions in space beyond the Earth, and really trying to encourage activity and privatization of the near Earth orbit, low Earth orbit missions.
Yeah. So this is where NASA is focusing more on the Mars and the Moon, and then get the private industries to help get us into suborbital flights.
And the hard science is being done by these missions of satellites and little rovers and things like that that are lean and mean relative to large projects in the past. And they're bringing us the hard science that we can follow up with and do more with locally.
Yeah. And the first successful flight from a crew perspective was May 30th.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the first time we tried.
We tried a few. The first scheduled launch had a window because of where the space station was. There was a small launch window. You either had to go or no go at a particular time, and the weather wasn't cooperating. So it was scrubbed on, I think it was Wednesday, right?
Yeah, it was May 27th. Mm-hmm. And I think it was about 16 minutes and 30 seconds to launch. They said no go. They scrubbed the flight, rescheduled for the 30th.
Maybe that's why we're so interested. We were on the edge of our seat, and we had to wait longer.
And what's also really cool is because this is a design by a private company. And again, there was not just one company doing these things, but this launched one company. But it was SpaceX that got to launch first with the crew. And that was pretty special, too.
Yeah, Elon Musk, sent up his own car last year, which was exciting. He's done some supply missions already. This is the second flight for preparing for the crew missions. So this was the demo two. They already did a demo one of the capsule and the launch system to get up to the space station and back. And this is the first time people were involved and ready to take over if needed, but it's designed to be automated.
Yep.
So, this is a new spaceship.
And as you said, it was based on their cargo, which, SpaceX, been like 4, maybe 5 years, they've actually been using their rockets to launch cargo to the space station.
Yeah.
And so then they've used that as the stepping stone for crew modules. And Elon Musk being Elon Musk, he always likes making things look futuristic and really cool.
They did a great job on those new spacesuits.
Yeah.
Making them look really nice and sleek and not this bulky, older remnants of what you think of as United States space program or any other space program. A lot of research going into that to redo everything from the ground up.
Yeah,
so to speak.
And outfitted the crew module with touchscreens even, which I think had a lot of people surprised.
Yeah. A lot of testing on those systems.
And what I'm really excited about is we have a future podcast where we're actually going to be talking about those touchscreens.
Yeah. And a simulation where you can actually use the same touchscreens they're using through a web browser with the Chrome interface.
And SpaceX, as we said, was not the only one. They were just first. But NASA had chosen two private companies to provide crew launch vehicles. So SpaceX being the first to be able to get crew up to the ISS. Mm-hmm. And the second one is Boeing's Starliner.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, have you seen the spacesuits for those?
I did. They're nice, too.
Yeah.
Definitely
not as sleek. I think they're still futuristic looking. I mean, it's a blue suit instead of the white and gray.
Exactly.
But what's interesting, what I saw with them, whereas the SpaceX suits have more of a, I don't know how you want to call it, but techno helmet with straight lines.
Yeah.
The Starliner outfits look more like a bubble in a way. Uh-huh. And I don't know if you remember the movie, was it back in the 90s? There was a movie, Lost in Space, based off the old TV series. And I'm not talking about the Netflix show, but the movie one, which did right. okay in theaters. I absolutely loved it. But what's interesting with that movie that they actually got a lot of praise in is the space suits there had giant bubbles that would come around the head. So you had a wide angle of view.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I immediately thought of when I saw the Starliner spacesuits is that, okay, they want to make it so the astronauts can see.
Now, before the movie, though, there was the TV series.
Yes.
That's old school.
But the Starliner outfits, again, different track, very functional. But also their crew module, I think they were taking more of a conservative approach. And so they're not thinking completely futuristic, but, you know, it's a definite upgrade from 30, 40, 50-year-old technology with nothing but push buttons. But they still went with more physical controls.
Boeing actually got more money for their attempts, but they were, you know, don't have the intermediate steps that SpaceX has been taking. So they kind of needed, you know, more development in order to get to the same place that SpaceX was, some catch up.
Correct. Yeah. And there's a great YouTube video that we're going to link in the description that talks about the rise of both and how SpaceX came out first. But also talking about that discrepancy in their different testing procedures, whereas one was doing more simulations versus one was doing actual use.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to weigh it. Do you test with your actual rockets that you build? And if they blow up, well, you're out of all that money. But if you spend so much time simulating it, well, you're never actually going to get out there.
Yeah. Proof is in the pudding, so to speak.
Yeah, so just two different approaches, and neither one is better than the other. So this effort between SpaceX, Starliner, and NASA has some great talking points, and we've got some future podcasts that we're going to do more deep dives in. But what we're really excited about was really how it captured our attention, how we were just watching it. Now, why do you think that was?
Well, this is one of the events that people can really relate to, right? There's this been 10-year gap. The United States is, you know, doing it, and private industry is in there, and, you know, it's a big deal. But it's really, you know, the summit of all this other effort that's been going on in the meantime, and a bunch of more effort that's just coming down the line now. So I think it really captured my interest, and I put YouTube on my TV and watched both of them very closely because I was fascinated. It's just amazing that, you know, they're doing it again.
Yeah, and it's really an interesting take from NASA's perspective in encouraging the private industry because really nothing I think in this country or even in the world, you know, when we talk about globalization, really nothing's going to take off unless private industry is involved until they can commercialize it. Yeah. And when you have a government agency just doing all the work and just sending out bids of, you know, who can provide rocket for X amount of dollars or you can get the lowest bid, nobody's going to be encouraged to do it. But in this case, when NASA...
Also, they're not reusing their spacecraft, right? If you took a plane from, New York to L.A., and you threw away the plane every time, it'd be pretty damn expensive. And so Elon Musk has been hammering home the fact that reusable spacecraft is a necessity in order to make it affordable and reasonable to really do this more often.
Yeah, and that's where I think their brilliance and what NASA did is, again, it gets these private companies to build it, and then it promises to pay for the launches, you know, to pay for the private companies and then also giving the knowledge resources to the private companies with these people with all these years of experience, and then allow these private companies to decide, you know, how they want to use these spacecrafts outside of their work with NASA, you know, for private industry use. Are there other countries who would like to use it for their space program who may not have the budget or resources to actually send people into space or, you know, build their own rockets? Or, you know, maybe they want to do something like space tourism, but it gives those industries the kickstart to start the initiative to see what they can come up with. And I think the ideas will just come from there.
And amortizing those costs over a wider, multiple use cases, gives you a lower overall cost and hopefully more reliability.
Yeah. And when you talk about reusability, one of the things that we definitely have to mention is the unique part about SpaceX is, yeah, the crew module got the astronauts safely to the space station, and it'll bring them back down, and we're going to definitely watch for that. But the booster, the rocket itself, landed on a barge that was a drone floating in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah. They're reusing these rockets.
It didn't splash down with parachutes. No, it landed.
That's right. Vertically, it used its own engine and landed back on its own 2-4 feet.
Yeah.
It's a huge step forward in you know, the economics and space, you know, operations and logistics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, and as I said, we're going to talk a little bit more about it later, is that we talk about reusability and how they build these things. But what I found really interesting in SpaceX's approach was the use of open source technology and open source software.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We're big proponents of that.
Yeah, exactly. So now we can get into the conversations of, you know, what should be crowdsourced in a way for ideas, you know, things that can be built. So this is where I think a lot of the excitement that we can talk about is, you have something as exciting as sending people into space. And right now it's a space station. Someday it's going to be the moon, and one day Mars.
Yeah.
You know, how can we get people excited? We've seen with the Linux movement of, hey, you put the code out there. People want to tinker, see what they can build, makes it better. Do it with the industry in space.
Yeah. SpaceX, you know, I was following them a bit before this. Just kind of watching the videos and checking the progress. And, you know, I saw the rocket land for the first time on its own. But Elon Musk keeps saying, you know, space is hard. You know, there have been plenty of drama along the way with exploding rockets and parts and all kinds of things. I just saw one recently. Another one had some problems this month or last month in a new video that I watched. And you know, YouTube has been great because I've been able to catch up on all these developments and see the history of what's been going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we're going to keep this show short because there's so much to talk about. And again, we're going to break these out into smaller shows, but really what we want to do is just really convey our excitement to the people listening to this about what this is all about. So please stay tuned for more shows where we're going to do deep dives into a lot of these topics.
Yeah, we're excited about this, partly because, you know, we just are science guys and we like this stuff, partly because of this big event. For me, it goes back even further. My grandfather was actually involved in the Oscar satellites that went up for amateur radio, sending satellites out into space and for scientific experimentation with radio. You know, so my grandfather was involved in some of those. And for me, that's a personal reason why I'm excited about this.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. And I can't wait till we talk about it in our upcoming show. So until
then,
Grant, yes, take care. And we'll talk to everybody in a short while.
Thanks, Ian. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Grant.